Hello everyone, welcome to Starscream's Ghost, a Transformers podcast, your episode-by-episode podcast guide through the classic Transformers Generation 1 cartoon and now Japanese anime continuity. I am Jeremy Graves, and joining me today as we embark on Operation Destroy the Decepticons, it is of course my good friend, Mr. Andy Hanley. Good sir, how are you doing?
Yes, I'm good. I'm ready to destroy the Decepticons, I think, hopefully. I feel like this may not go as well as the title suggests, but let's see.
We shall get onto that in just a few moments, because today we are discussing episode 31 of Transformers Headmasters, that being aptly titled, and as we've both already given away now, Operation Destroy the Decepticons. If you are a first-time listener and or viewer to the podcast, thank you very much for giving us a chance. We hope you enjoy the show. We'll be diving deep into this episode, as we have done with all of the American G1 and all of Headmasters up to this point. And if you want to watch the video version of this podcast so you can see us discussing this, you can find it on YouTube, of which, hi YouTube, and you can also see behind me is a DVD set. That is the DVD set we are following, released by Metrodome in the UK in 2005. That is the translation that we are following accordingly. And no matter where you have found our podcast, if you would like to find more information or links to our social media channels, make sure you head over to our website, starscreamspod.com. All the links you need accordingly can be found there. But Andy, as mentioned, we are discussing episode 31 today. Just some general quick overview thoughts as to what you thought of this episode.
Yeah, this is another... I mean, this is a bit of a curveball for me, honestly. I felt like this was going to be a real sort of, you know, we talked in the last episode about, oh, the tide has kind of turned in favor of the Decepticons again. I thought this was maybe going to be a big sort of episode to rebalance that somewhat, but it kind of turns out not to be. It kind of follows some of the through lines that have been sort of running throughout this series and kind of ramps some of them up in some interesting ways, specifically around Chrome Dome. And yeah, like this was definitely an episode. We've sort of joked about this series in the past where like you can read the episode title and you know exactly what's going to happen. This was one where I wasn't quite so sure. And so it sort of made it quite refreshing in terms of like, I don't know what's going to go on here. So let's just see. And yeah, like it's kind of... It's a weird one because it's kind of important, but it's also not important in the way that other recent episodes have been. So yeah, it's kind of quite an intriguing little thing to drop in at this point in the series.
Yeah, it's... What's the way to try and phrase this? I agree with everything you said, but an actual element of the end of the episode, and this, again, this is me factoring in, as we sort of say in every podcast at some point, this is ultimately a kid's cartoon. Ultimately, I think some of the message of the episode is lost right at the end of it. Especially when it comes to Chrome Dome's character, which we'll get into more in depth, but I feel his character really goes on a particular journey in this episode, and come the end, it's kind of just forgiven, quite frankly, what he influenced and what he did.
Which is strange, because yeah, as we'll get into, like, it's kind of quite serious stuff. It feels like I did certainly think this was going to be a real big ticket item for like what happens certainly around Chrome Dome's character for the remaining episodes, but then like you say, kind of that ending point makes this feel a little bit more fillery of just like, ah, it's fine. It's like, I'm not sure it's fine, but okay, if you say so, Headmasters.
Exactly. And unfortunately, we just have to take it as it were. But you know what? We've sort of danced around now. That's quite a big thing to talk about. So let's move straight on and we can get onto that to perhaps towards the end of the episode. So let's move on to episode 31 proper as we discuss Operation Destroy the Decepticons. First thing to note, Andy, the subtitles are out of time again.
Yeah. I feel like it's got to the point where I barely notice because I've gotten so used to it that my brain just kind of like auto-adjusts it in my head of just like, no, I just know how this works now. Like, I'm just used to Shout Factory's bad subtitling.
Yeah, or Metrodome in this instance, actually.
Or Metrodome, yes, indeed.
Yeah. So, picking up from the events at the end of episode 30, which you can hear on our last podcast, we begin with the narrator informing us, quote-unquote, the damage done by the time bomb has been repaired. Fortress Maximus has been badly damaged. However, there is a bigger problem. The enemy has been allowed to build the Zarak shield. As this is being said, we, the viewer, could see the combined form of the train bots, Raiden, and the combined form of the protector bots, Defensor, repairing Battleship Maximus. We then cut to like a meeting room or the ready room, like you'd probably see in an episode of Star Trek for a bit of context, with Fortress, the Autobot Headmasters, RC, and the Autobot Target Masters all present. For what it's worth, which, not a lot really, we see Daniel and Wheelie elsewhere on the ship, and they're playing Daniel's light gun game, and complaining that even that game is favouring the Decepticons, because it looks like they're shooting one of the enemies from that. Yeah. And my first thought was, maybe it's just because you're a bit naff at the game, buddy.
Yeah. I mean, also, like, somebody needs to get Daniel some more games for that thing. Like, I realised this was a different time where you can't just log into Steam and download something else. You know, he's got to go down to his local WH Smiths to buy something, or his local Woolworths, or whatever.
This is his one game for the year, Andy. This is
this is it. I mean, I don't know. I feel like he could. He's the kid that could manipulate Spike into like buying him every game console, and just be like, yeah, he's the kid at school. Like, yeah, I've got an NES and a Master System and a Game Boy, and a whatever else. Insert other consoles here. My other question is, why do the Autobots have a pool table?
I mean, look, why do they have a gym?
Well, yes, I mean, but even more so, at least the gym I can tangentially kind of understand. Like, yeah, I don't know, maybe robots need to keep fit as well. But like, I mean, the pool table is human. Maybe Spike bought that for Daniel as well. He's just like, Dad, I need a pool table. I need to play pool with Wheelie. It's like, oh, fine then.
And Spike's like, I can't call in another favor for Fortress.
Yeah, like Fortress, can you stop by Argos on your way to Planet Master? the kid needs a pool table. But yeah, it's just like, I don't know. That's like, again, this is back to my question from the last episode. Like, does Daniel go to school? It's like, surely, you know, not to be the boring guy, but like, maybe they should buy him a desk and some writing implements so he can do his homework and not just play light gun games and pool all the time.
What if this entire series just takes place during the summer holidays of school?
I mean, it could be. We don't really. We have no point. Have we really been made clear like what the time frame is? Like maybe, yeah. This whole thing, the Decepticons. Galvatron was very kind of like, look, term time ends in June. Like we'll start blowing up planets then, so that we don't interfere with Daniel's education.
We have a ceasefire until the end of term time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then yeah, we've got to be done by September so that he can go back to school.
And the other thing to note about this scene involving the gun game is that Wheelie ends up playing it for a bit, loses as well, gets frustrated, throws the zapper at the screen, breaking it. So he rage quit.
He's the guy that caused them to have to like put a warning notification on the Wiimote to say like, gotta strap it to your hand or you're gonna break the TV. Like that was Wheelie's fault. Transformers was responsible for that as well.
I mean, look, to be fair, Wheelie's responsible for a lot where we are in this story.
Yeah, absolutely.
So back in the briefing room that I mentioned, Fortress is fearing that Scorponok is going to make a fresh attempt to blow up the planet Earth for its plasma energy, something that we have seen him do for both Cybertron and the planet Mars earlier in the series. A brief part of the discussion from Point Blank turns to the simple fact of why are they afraid of this new weapon? Chrome Dome citing in response that if it can counter the Master Sword, something needs to be done. But Sure Shot, the Target Master, then points out, however menacing it is, the Zarak Shield is not an offensive weapon. Point Blank then adding, it's only a defensive device. That's why we must disperse the enemy and lure them into space. So to summarise more of this conversation, to perhaps give a bit more context, the Target Masters are advocating for a divide-and-conquer style tactic against the Decepticons. They want to separate the Decepticons by luring them into space to pick them off one by one. Meaning that, as Crosshairs the Target Master literally puts it, however strong his shield is, we will have Scorponok isolated. Fortress is liking this suggestion of a plan, but Chrome Dome, being the hot-headed guy that he is, of course opposes the plan, fearing that the expanse of space is actually too vast a battleground, and that the chance of the enemy escaping as a result is too great. Which, you know what, Andy? Not a bad thought from Chrome Dome.
No, I mean, this is actually kind of an interesting sort of discussion on both sides, because, yeah, like, you can totally see the Target Master's point of view, and it is an eminently logical one of, like, well, you know, at least in space they're not going to blow up any planets, and B, yeah, like, if you can get Scorponok on his own, then, you know, you can just beat him with sheer weight of numbers, potentially. So it makes sense. But yeah, Chrome Dome also has a good point of, like, you know, they can escape just like that because it's space. So yeah, like, good interesting conversation on both sides there.
So the Target Masters have a moment here. They could perhaps finally try and put their differences aside with the Headmasters and maybe come to, like, some kind of, yeah, you've got a point, but I still think we can make this work. Or they can just literally poo-poo the idea from Chrome Dome. They go with the latter.
Who could point have foreseen blank, this?
Point blank saying, we won't let them escape. I said we'd crush them. And then Sure Shot adding to this, the key to success is knowledge of the enemy's movements. Leave that to us. And so the Target Masters depart on a scouting mission. But Chrome Dome is not pleased about this. He says to Fortress, Commander, this shouldn't be settled in space. And then Fortress says, Point Blank's plan avoids damage to Planet Master. Remember that, folks. Remember that. A short time later, we see that Chrome Dome is now on the surface of Planet Master, leading his fellow headmasters on a winding path through, let's just say, sort of like a mountainous region, if you will. His three companions all agree that the Target Master shouldn't be allowed to boss them around. I know they're getting a little bit sick of it, quite frankly. And Chrome Dome is now planning, as a result, to stage a plan of his own. But the other headmasters don't know what this plan is, so they're just kind of along for the ride at the moment. The team arrives at an abandoned mine, of which we see some more Transformery-like folk standing in front of it. Hardhead says, who are they? And Chrome Dome just responds with, our comrades.
To be fair, that was also my question when these characters appeared. It's like, especially having had the Duocons arrive, I was like squinting at the screen. I was like, who are these guys? Like, should I know who these characters are?
Confused, but of course trusting their comrade Chrome Dome, the headmasters proceed inside. Meanwhile, Sound Blaster and his cassettes, that being in this instance, Ratbat, Rumble, and Laserbeak Andy. We've got the proper, like, couple of G1 people making an appearance here, which I was delighted at.
Likewise, the dream team.
There you go. And the Decepticon Target Master buddies are all patrolling the area around the new Decepticon base of operations, which is hidden inside a mountain. Now, this is a really random note, Andy, but I wanted to mention it, seeing as a couple of podcasts ago we discussed how the Autobot Target Master buddies sort of talk to each other in sort of like a Simlish type language. Mm-hmm. The dialogue sounds for the Decepticon Target Master buddies. It wasn't the same, but to me it sounded very similar to what the Jawas make in Star Wars.
Yeah, there's definitely a bit of that going on.
Now, the reason I mentioned the Target Master buddies specifically, the Decepticon ones, is because they notice the Autobot Target Masters approaching their base by climbing up the side of the mountain they are holding. Which, of course, is a good plan in principle, Andy, but when one of your team is coloured bright yellow, maybe not the best idea.
Yeah, I mean, even then, again, you know, we've seen, you know, Sandblaster hiding in a box recently, you know, doing his surreptitious surveillance. I mean, again, the Autobots have a history of maybe not being very good at covert operations. You know, this is the group that sent Jetfire in as the, like, sneaky, you know, surveillance operative on a mountain as well. So, you know, this is the Autobots have prior history with this one.
But rather than just firing at will, the Decepticon Target Masters instead go to report to their comrades what they have spotted. Inside the base, we see that Scorponok is having a bit of a meeting with his Decepticon comrades. He highlights, quote-unquote, we must save energy until we blow up Earth. Avoid any unnecessary combat before departure. We then get a firefight outside following the discovery of the Autobot Target Masters. Everyone now knows about this. Sixshot and the Decepticon Headmasters and Target Masters attack the three Autobots en masse. But despite putting up a decent showing, the Autobots are actually overpowered by the sheer number of Decepticons, who succeed in surrounding their enemy. Back at the mine, the narrator saying, "Meanwhile, Chrome Dome joins forces with Planet Master's warriors. They try to devise a new strategy." We see that they are greeted by the leader of this group of folk, who we later randomly find out, Andy, in a very throwaway line, that apparently this guy's name is Kirk.
I mean, better than Jax, so, you know.
Fair.
And I'm just assuming that this is a very obvious Star Trek reference and that they're doing this on purpose.
Chrome Dome presents his strategy to, let's say, an uneasy eyebrow, who is questioning if they really want to settle this battle on Planet Master, as if the plan goes wrong, and as was implied by Fortress, there could be heavy casualties and damage. Chrome Dome's plan, which he is clear to mention, quote-unquote, our comrades, i.e. their new comrades, are 100% behind us on this. The plan is to lure the Decepticons into the confines of a cloudy mountain range nearby, which should impact their bearings, thereby trapping them and leaving them open to attack. As far as ideas go, Andy, not the worst in the world. And you're like, okay, I kind of see where you're getting at. Probably need to iron it out a little bit. But in principle, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, not the worst, but maybe also, like, not the best. It's just, like, very dependent. I mean, again, the lots of, like, Transformer physiology questions. Of, like, do they even care if it's cloudy? Like, do they not have, like, infrared, like, sensors and stuff? Like, surely they can just see through it. But sure, like, it's not... This is not the first time in, like, the history of war that somebody has said, like, hey, why, what if we attack them while they're, like, obscured by cloud?
Highbrow voices some concerns about the plan, but Chrome Dome, to say the least, is very headstrong about this working. Just then, Hardhead and Brainstorm enter with a report from one of the aerial scout crafts of their new comrades that seemingly they now know that the Autobot Target Masters are having a bit of a predicament in a battle. There is then a discussion about whether the headmasters should go and help them. Chrome Dome makes sure to mention, in what I think, Andy, was a genuine thought rather than a dig, but the actual dialogue makes it sound like a dig. He literally says, they're professional fighters. They won't make mistakes.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, given, like, the back and forth between, like, those two groups. You can't quite tell whether that's said with sincerity or with a little bit of a kind of smirk.
The location of this conflict, though, allows Chrome Dome to sort of vaguely get an idea as to where this new Decepticon base is, putting the final touches to his plan. Although, in a later scene, I should say, he is left to wonder where exactly the Decepticons will appear from, so he's got, like, a map that he's drawing crosses on to figure out where they might appear from. And that's kind of not going to help his plan entirely, it would turn out. At that same moment, the Target Masters are taking very heavy fire from the Decepticons. But the same scout craft that I mentioned a few moments ago that was appearing in the sky and found out where the Target Masters were, this is distracting the Decepticons. They were like, is that one of ours? Do we know them? That they just really don't know. This gives the Target Masters, the Autobots I should say, Target Masters, the opening they need to break through the enemy line and escape accordingly. And this was where we got one of our slapstick moments of the episodes, where they sort of went up like the edge of a cliff, and rather than just landing on the ground, they landed on Mind Wipe. All three of the Target Masters did, so that was quite funny. Annoyed at the fact that the Autobots are getting away, the Decepticons are about to follow them when Sixshot stops them, saying, the enemy's becoming more of a threat. We mustn't fall into their trap. And of course, reminding them as well about the lack of energy that they have at the moment, and they must conserve as much as they can per Scorponok's earlier instructions. The Target Masters en route to returning to Battleship Maximus, they come across a whole bunch of guns, like, on the mountainside, what, like, turrets and such, being manned by young Master Warriors. And they immediately suspect that Chrome Dome's probably had a hand in this, because they just know at this point. But they not only saw this, because Sound Blaster also spotted this. We then get back to the Decepticon base, and Soundblaster reports his discovery. The way he phrases it, Andy, is, "The headmasters are working with the youth of Planet Master." Which, I won't lie, I did get a chuckle out of, like you did just then.
Yeah, that's a very good turn of phrase. Like, this damn youths. I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for those pesky kids.
And at this moment, Scorponok announces his plan for the remainder of this story. This episode, I should say, not the whole series. He plans to strike the center of a nearby city, then fly to Earth. Though, Weird Wolf is questioning this plan slightly, Sixshot is 100% in favour of it and says to leave it to him. So, a lot is going on here, Andy. I'm sort of breezing through in many ways, somewhat unintentionally, but the reason I've sort of breezed through it is because a lot of the big elements of the story will be coming towards the end of the episode, but so far, in terms of how this is proceeding and the themes that they're doing, and also some of the action we've seen, it's been an enjoyable episode up to now, but like you sort of alluded to at the start, at the moment, it doesn't feel like there's a lot going on in this episode. It's not enjoyable, but it feels like we're on a little bit of like a take a breather at the moment.
Yeah, and this is certainly an episode that sort of requires a decent chunk of setup, because as soon as you hear, like, you know, the Decepticon saying, like, hey, we need to, like, conserve energy, that's pretty much drawing a line under this episode of, like, nothing major is really going to happen in terms of moving the big picture forward here, because nobody wants to get involved. Like, this is like the midweek cup tie in football parlance of, like, you know, we don't want to lose this one, but we're not going to, like, you know, expend all of our efforts on this because we've got some big games coming up. So, you know, we'll... best endeavors, and that does kind of set the tone for what this episode is going to be, but at the same time, yeah, it's I always enjoy it. And again, we've talked about this before, where you have sort of a bunch of sort of different groups working on different things at different times, and this sort of has a bit of that, because the headmasters are doing their thing, the target masters are doing theirs, and so there's an interesting sort of, you know, smorgasbord of stuff going on, even if none of it is really kind of come to fruition at this point.
Very, very true. On that note, back on Battleship Maximus, the Target Masters report their discovery and, quite frankly, Point Blank's intuition, quote unquote, of Chrome Dome leading the youth to Fortress. Fortress responds with, "He said he went to survey the Decepticons' movements."
Yeah, I mean, did Fortress learn nothing from, like, literally, like, a couple of episodes ago, where Chrome Dome's like, "Oh yeah, just doing reconnaissance," and they were actually going on a rescue mission? It's like, if Chrome Dome's telling you he's just gonna go do some reconnaissance, maybe he's gonna go do something else.
But seemingly having learnt something from those previous episodes, Andy, Fortress, rather than just hoping for the best, decides he should just contact the source directly. So we then see him effectively go into big head mode. If you're a fan of the X-Men, he kind of has a variant of the Cerebro headset to detect mutants all over the world. But he utilizes his own equivalent of that to then use telepathy to contact Chrome Dome.
Yeah, so this is like the equivalent of getting called by your mum when you've, like, you said you were just going down the shops and actually you're hanging out with your friends, like, drinking, and you're like, "Oh no, okay, I've got to take this call." Guys, shut up in the background, stop shouting.
But the way the conversation unfolds is Chrome Dome doesn't lie to Fortress. He just doesn't tell him a lot. He sort of says that he's near a city, but he doesn't really say why. Which is quite funny.
Yeah, it's like, "No, Mum, I'm just out. I'm just out. That's it. Oh, I gotta go. Bye."
Yeah, it's like they're going, "Are you nearby?" It's like, "Oh yeah, I'm in town."
Yeah.
It's like, "Well, where? I can't hear you." Yeah. Like you said,
it's like, "You're not in the pub, are you?" Like, "I'm just in town."
You're breaking up. "I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Sorry, bye.
Yeah, going through a tunnel.
But as these two, Fortress and Chrome Dome, are having this conversation, it's cut short when the Decepticons out of nowhere make their move. Scorponok, you know, we've been sort of musing a little bit, like Chrome Dome was trying to figure out where Scorponok could emerge from. I don't think anyone on their bingo card, Andy, had that Scorponok itself would appear from underneath this city.
No, they probably should have thought of this, to be fair. But it's not quite what they were ready for. It's also kind of quite cool, to be honest.
Yep.
Like, it's a really good shot of Scorponok just kind of breaking through, like, you know, whatever. So it was worth it.
Definitely. So Scorponok is breaking through the city from underneath, and everything is just being thrown into utter chaos. What we also see, Andy, in arguably one of perhaps the more directly violent moments we've seen in the series, and at this point we've seen quite a few, to be quite frank, the Decepticon Target Masters are just picking off the locals with gunshots, just as they're flying about, and they're freaking enjoying it. And one of them, I don't remember which one, as he's told to conserve his energy, he just starts wasting a building next to him, just shooting out all the windows and stuff along an office block. It was really, really cool visually to look at, but holy heck.
Yeah. And it's also, it's even the way it's framed is kind of quite enjoyable because, they're strictly told, like, hey, remember, we're conserving energy. And they're basically just like, no, like, just let us have our fun. And it's just, it's one of those... I always enjoy it when, like, the Transformers media does this, whether it's in comics or the cartoon or whatever, where you sort of get, like, the real true nature of chaos of the Decepticons, of just, like, they just enjoy breaking stuff. Like, never mind the big picture ruling the universe or whatever. They just like seeing the world burn sometimes. And, like, especially sort of the lower level Decepticons, they're just there for the... you know, just there for the funsies of just blowing stuff up. And this is, a really good sequence of them just having at it and just being like, there's no tactical, like, you know, benefit to any of this, but we're just having a good time.
Exactly. And they wouldn't have it any other way. So now, as mentioned, the Autobots and, quite frankly, the youth of Planet Master, they're all caught off guard completely by this tactic. Chromedome then says, quote-unquote, "We did everything to defend this city." Which I thought...
Did you, though?
did you? He then shouts, "I won't forgive you. I'll follow you beyond the clouds." Or, "I'll chase you." That's the word, sorry. Beyond the clouds.
Yeah. It's like, you did one thing, maybe, to defend the city. Like, not everything. And sort of also bearing the lead that... you're the one that jeopardized the city in the first place. Like, this wouldn't even have happened had you not tried this gambit.
We then get a brief scuffle between the respective headmaster teams, resulting in Skullcruncher, very amusingly in another slapstick moment, being put to sleep by Mindwipe accidentally, which then prompts Weird Wolf to shout at Skullcruncher, "Asleep on the job!" Kicks him in the back into Mindwipe. Which is a great moment.
Yeah, we've not had much proper slapstick kind of headmasters in a while, so it was enjoyable. I feel like I remember this being like another, and I could be wrong here, but I feel like this was another like infamous like Omni Productions clip that I've seen a couple of times of like their version of this.
So something significant to note then potentially. But just then, a fleet of the ships from the youth of Master, that sounds like the name of a film at this point, appear in the sky, and they bombard Scorponok and the Decepticons with firepower. Even, like, the multiplying transformation powers of Sixshot aren't any match for this youth of Master, as it were. And quite frankly, Andy, if you want me to be direct about it, the youth of Master have done a far better job than the Headmasters have done for quite a while against Scorponok.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of the Youth of Master's second album, personally. But one of the great indie bands of its generation. So,
Youth of Master's second album, Growing Pains.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, and I mean, this is sort of the point, because all the way through up to this point, I'm just like, this is a terrible plan. Like, these guys are just going to get mullered, and it's going to end real bad. And this was the point where I'm just like, maybe this is actually going to work out. Like, again, especially given the episode title, I'm like, oh, maybe this is going to be a big, like, Chromedome redemption story of just, like, no, like, he stuck his neck out and actually made the right call and actually getting the people of Master to kind of rise up and attack here was the right plan. It's like, okay, this is kind of interesting. Where are we going from here?
So at this point, Scorponok knows he is so close to winning, and this fact is making him really angry. But he also knows he can't spare the energy to transform into robot mode, because if he did that, he knows he would just crush them instantly. But he needs to save the energy for when he ultimately is going to face Fortress Maximus on Earth. Battleship Maximus, meanwhile, is approaching the city and can see Scorponok being attacked in the air by all of these fighter jets and such. Daniel is cheering on Chrome Dome, but point blank, right next to him, is more concerned by the fact there's going to be loads of casualties as a result of Chrome Dome's actions. Again, sort of like you've implied, Andy, kind of telegraphing where this is going to go and really implying that in a big way.
Also an interesting kind of like perspective thing that this is a sort of a thing that this series has been really like hammering home since the Target Masters came along, that like they are combat veterans and they know what this scenario means, that it's, you know, there's going to be a big body count. This is not your typical fight where it's just like, you know, there's going to be nothing but a bit of collateral damage. Like, this is, you've involved all of these people. A bunch of them are not going to be going home tonight.
100%. And it adds more, what's the word I'm trying to think of? That perspective the Target Masters have, we've seen it in little glimpses since they've debuted, like you said, but this is the moment when it's really hammered home, and it's exponentially more so in a few more moments' time as well, sort of what this could all mean. So It is good to see, even though they haven't really been around for much time, but the Target Masters have become quite a focal point of the story now.
Yeah, absolutely. Which, again, I wasn't necessarily expecting that. I thought they were going to be introduced as like, hey, look at these other cool toys, and they were going to have a cool episode or two and then sort of just be lackeys and the headmasters would be the focus. But they have actually had a really important part to play in their own right since their introduction.
I mean, heck, look at the clone bots that we were introduced to. We've seen the Autobot pair once and the Decepticon pair twice, I think.
Yeah. And even like the Duocons, I suspect we're not going to see a whole lot of them doing anything all that important. They're just thrown in as just like, hey, look at these cool toys.
Yeah, they got the memo. Oh, these are being released around this time. Can you put them in the cartoon?
Yeah, exactly.
Can you shoehorn them in? So Fortress arrives just as the Youth Warriors manage to force the Decepticons in the midst of battle into the cloudy mountain peak area that Chrome Dome was discussing earlier. However, Andy, though Chrome Dome had the great thought of, if we can get the Decepticons into the clouds, then they'll become perhaps a bit confused, they won't have their bearings and such, we'll be able to attack. He didn't think of the one big flaw in that plan from the other perspective, in that, yes, the Decepticons are hiding in the clouds and maybe they won't be able to have their bearings completely and they won't be able to see each other and such or attack. But what if they're hidden and you, the attacker, can't see them?
Yeah, exactly. This was my thought as soon as this, like, this is where, like, a more sensible plan. If you create the technology to, like, you know, your infrared or whatever, to see them in the clouds, but they can't see you, then yes, this is a good plan. But yeah, otherwise you're basically both running into the same issue of, like, of visibility becoming a problem.
And this, of course, is now just demonstrated perfectly, because we start seeing from beneath the clouds laser shots appearing, and we see the Youth of Masters jets just getting picked off one by one, just ships getting destroyed all over the place. So much so, this includes the ship that Kirk is piloting. And at this point, Battleship Maximus is nearby, and Fortress just calls for a retreat to end this. He says, quote unquote, "I can't allow any more fighting. Chrome Dome, call back the fighter squadrons." Chrome Dome responds with, "But Commander!" Fortress cuts him off. "Look around you." And then we get to see those dramatic still image shots that we've had at various points in the show of just crafts being blown up. Chronedome sees this. I assume the still images rather than what's going on around him.
Yeah, someone's just got a bunch of pictures they've taken and just like a bunch of flashcards.
And then he just simply says, all withdraw. Scorponok then orders the Decepticons to pull out and make for Earth. But Fortress has other plans in mind. Cue the opening title theme of the show to start playing as Fortress shouts, Big Mode! And he transforms into Fortress Maximus, blocking their way. But despite his earlier notion of needing to save energy for an impending battle with Maximus on Earth, Scorponok realizes this is the moment he's been waiting for. So he too transforms his transector into robot mode. And immediately we see the Zarak shield glow. We get some fighting between the two. Scorponok is able to knock Fortress Maximus down during this. There's a moment when it looks like that Fortress Maximus could have its head decapitated while being pinned to the ground. But a laser shot from the knee of Fortress Maximus gets Scorponok in the face, which I laughed at heartily because it was a great move.
Yeah, that's also like a very sort of un-Autobot move as well. Like it doesn't feel particularly like a clean fight in that moment. And it's like, well, you know, maybe if you'd resorted to these dirty tactics with your 3.5-foot floppy, then, you know, you wouldn't be in this mess in the first place. But fair play to you anyway.
Then this leads to the moment we've been waiting for. Fortress Maximus is in the air, coming down with Master Sword in hand. Scorponok is leaping up into the air, Zarak shield in hand. Which of these two weapons will emerge triumphant? The next shot we see is kind of like a blank canvas of the surrounding area. And suddenly the Master Sword just comes crashing down into frame and is stuck in the ground. Followed literally a few moments later by Fortress Maximus falling down to the ground in a heap. Scorponok then shouts, ah, I did it. I repelled the Master Sword. I will spare your life this time. Off to Earth. And with Fortress Maximus downed, and the Decepticons now on their way to Earth, Chronedome moves to follow them, but point blank stops him, and just in general tries to get him to stop, quite frankly, after everything he's done. Eventually, he just has to clip Chronedome around the side of the head, and just says, listen, the damage to this city and the loss of young lives were a result of your excesses. Chronedome responds by going, excesses? No, it was a strategy that was bound to succeed. And at this point blank, really losing his cool, just basically grabs Chronedome by like the scruff of the neck. Heck, maybe it was his neck, quite frankly. And just says, don't you understand? Have you ever considered the feelings of others? He lets go of the neck. Get real. Don't get obsessed with your own schemes. And then suddenly, after Chronedome has just literally had the riot act read to him, and everything is being put into perspective, Kirk then appears from the wreckage of his ship. And he walks over towards Chronedome. Chronedome apologizes for putting his life in danger. Now, Kirk has a decision here, Andy. He can say a few things here, could literally just make Chronedome actually realise how stupid of a decision it was, a lot of what he has done. Or he can go in the other direction, just go, ah, it's alright, buddy, you'll be alright next time. We effectively get the latter, because he basically says he is equally to blame for all of this, and all of the youth of Master were well aware of what they were getting themselves into. And then the two shake hands. Well, Kirk shakes Chromedone's finger because of the size difference. And then Maximus heads back into space, hot on the trail of the Decepticons. The narrator then comes on the voiceover and says, this was their first taste of defeat. But they can't just withdraw troops. can't just withdraw troops, excuse me. Can Fortress and the Autobots meet the challenge of the Zarak Shield? And that's how the episode ends. As I alluded to at the start, Andy, ultimately, the journey that Chrome Dome goes on, it's basically just null and voided by what Kirk says. And it is actually really annoying that that's the way it happened. He still perhaps could have apologized and said, look, we all got into this knowing what we were getting into. But I think he still could have reprimanded Chrome Dome at least a little bit.
Yeah, it's a really tricky one. And this is definitely one of the rare moments where I feel like this series like bites off more than it can chew, in a sense, in that like war is complicated. And, you know, you can have a command that has a terrible strategy that, you know, results in a massive loss of life. But at the same time, like, the people fighting in that war are aware of the stakes and probably they don't want to be there, but feel like they have to be there. And, like, this could almost be, like, a 2-3 episode, like, story in itself. Because you never really get to see... I think this is the big issue. You never really get to see the fullness of the youth of Master and like what their feelings about being dragged into this is. And that in itself is probably a complicated thing. There'd probably be people there who are like, this is not our problem. And people there who are like, no, this is actually like, this is an important like moral stand to take, whatever it is. And there'd be a bunch of complexity within that, that, you know, this kids cartoon is trying to boil down into a single episode. And I feel like that's kind of the problem, is like, it sort of mixes its messages, because yeah, like Point Blank is absolutely on point, as it were, in being like, yeah, like you've completely lost sight of the big picture and what your ideas mean for, like, you know, people more generally. But also, like, you know, it is also a valid point that the people he brought in probably wanted, at least in part, to fight that fight. But yeah, it's certainly like the way it's presented here does sort of undermine the important part, because the Chrome Dome's character arc has been a really important part of this series, like his decision making. And it's sort of it's actually quite interesting kind of across the board, because there are things that Chrome Dome has blamed himself for that are not necessarily entirely his fault, but this one definitely is, and he kind of doesn't really take responsibility for this one. And so it's sort of, you know, yeah, it's definitely been an interesting character study, as kind of like, he's practically like the main character of this show, really. Like, Chrome Dome is the headmaster that gets the most time spent on him. Like, all of the others are pretty sidelined. And so, you know, he's almost like the hot rod of the headmasters in this show. And yeah, like, I do feel like it was a missed opportunity to be a very clear squaring the circle around his character arc throughout this series, to be like, look, you're always doing this. You're always going off doing your own thing. This time it has really come back and bitten you on multiple levels. Like, you know, you're responsible for a lot of people dying. You're kind of responsible for Fortress being defeated in this fight, because it wouldn't have probably come to that had you been more patient about it. Like, you know, the whole thing is a big old mess and you are at the center of it. And so, yeah, like, it would have been better had they just left the episode at that, I think.
Yeah, and of course, like you've alluded to as well, he's gone off and done his own thing so many times, be it for better or worse, like in the case of saving Wheelie, you take your pick on that. But there is just that moment here where there could have been a very clear character growth moment. When, even if it had just been he actually came to the realization of, you're right, like, I understand. If he had admitted that what he had done has really influenced a lot of the tragedy in this episode, then still had the conversation with Kirk, but him going, no, look, I am a lot to blame for this. I understand you knew what you signed up for. It doesn't change the fact this was my plan to approach you to do it.
Yeah.
Again, just not owning up to it. And that's the part that's annoying, and yeah, just annoying more than anything. Because I half expect in the next episode, whatever it's going to be, that Chrome Dome will do something exactly the same that's similar, and it'll be totally fine.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be the interesting thing of, like, because regardless of what is said here, like, yeah, does he then go off and reflect on it and be like, yeah, next time he's going to listen to what Fortress or the Target Master says, or are we going to have, like, you know, more episodes of this in the future? Because this feels like it should, the fact that a whole episode is dedicated to this like I say, it could be that this is sort of kind of like a pseudo filler, but it could be that this is a very important kind of line that is drawn where, yeah, Chrome Dome will toe the line. But yeah, I guess we will see.
And to sort of draw a parallel here, because I appreciate some people listening to this might just go, dude, it's a kid's cartoon, like, lighten up. But to draw another comparison here, Andy, in the world of Gundam, which is also an anime, which kids could have watched on TV as well, that, obviously, it's a whole... If you take the original Gundam series as a case in point here, I guess, I can't remember which Gundam series might have been airing at the time of this. I might have to do a quick Google and find that out. But that goes super deep into just the war in general and how everything is affected in this. So it's not uncommon for this theme to be depicted in anime arguably aimed at children. It's just, again, it's annoying, like you said, it's sort of contained into this one episode, and maybe if it could have been spread out over two, they might have been able to do a better job of honing this particular element of growth into it.
Yeah, for sure. And I would, you know, this is one of those sort of theoreticals throughout this series where I wished, like, you know, it would be really interesting to, like, interview some of the writers on this series, because I suspect Gundam was probably an influence on this episode. Like, it feels like it has... It wants to do some of that stuff, like, within the sort of the confines of what it's doing. And, you know, maybe that's me projecting, but, like, Gundam does, like, loom so large over, like, a lot of anime and giant robot anime that I would not be at all surprised if there was some Gundam influence in there.
So, I've actually just looked up the writer quickly on the TF Wiki just to see if there was anything noted. So, Yoshihisa Araki, I hope I pronounced that right, it is noted, was an anime screenwriter in the 70s and 80s in Transformers. He wrote some episodes of Headmasters, Super Godmaster Force, and Victory. Outside of Transformers, he wrote episodes for other giant mecha shows such as Mobile Suit Gundam, Daitan 3, Zarbungle, and the second Tetsujin 28 show, New Gigantor, as well as non-mecha anime. So that right there, Andy, that's just proven the point, hasn't it?
So this is not even so much like Gundam influence as just like, yeah, written from a guy that wrote some of Gundam. Maybe without like Tomino shouting over his shoulder constantly, it maybe you missed the mark a little bit, but yeah, that definitely adds up.
He was involved per IMDb in some of the theatrical Mobile Suit Gundam films. So it was noted as screenplay for the first recap film, if you will. But for those who don't know, the original Gundam series, it aired as a television show, but was then condensed into three theatrical films with some redone and touched up elements and whatnot some years later. So was involved in all three of the films. The first one noted as screenplay, then the second two specifically noted as a writer.
Yeah, which would, by extension, mean that he wrote some of the episodes of that series.
Wrote six of them, in fact, now I've gone a bit further down here.
Yeah, there we go. So yeah, he was literally a guy that wrote some of Gundam. So yeah, that definitely scans with what this episode tries to do.
Episodes 3, 7, 11, 15, 21, and 25. Episode 15, Andy, being the infamous episode that Tomino, the creator of Gundam, does not like.
Yeah.
And that's why a theatrical film was recently made re-depicting that story. But I digress. So with that being said, Andy, let's go into the TF Wiki notes proper now, and let's see what they've got to say about this episode, because no doubt there'll be some interesting additional notes to take note of here. Just breezing through here, Daniel is using his Challenge Blaster, which we originally saw in the episode Find Scorponok's Weak Spot, again in this episode. But it's back to just being a toy now, after being upgraded into a real pistol by Highbrow in a recent episode.
Yeah, although it turns out you can still do damage just by throwing it at something, so thanks, BD, for discovering that.
It mentions here as well that Skullcruncher has previously been accidentally hypnotized by Mindwipe in the episodes Four Warriors Come Out of the Sky, which I'm pretty sure was like episode one or two at this point.
Yeah, that happens in episode one, yeah.
And also Explosion on Mars Maximus is in danger, so this is the third time that Skullcruncher has been accidentally hit by the hypnotizing stuff.
Yep, do love a good running gag.
Animation and technical error. So, okay, I'm going to read this verbatim, though I didn't notice this. Defensor's left arm, first aid, the Transformer, should have the word emergency written on the side of it. Instead, the bottom half says, quote, in capital letters, TCM E-G-R-I-E. Took Megri. Close enough, says the TF Wiki.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah. You can imagine that being a sort of rush thing of like, wait, what's this robot supposed to say? It's like, I just put some English letters on. We're in a hurry. Don't worry about it.
Throughout this episode, several robots appear based on the animation model of the Autobot Master Warriors. The only referred to by name is Kirk, but his color scheme is nothing like his actual toy, leaving it unclear whether or not any of the generic unnamed robots are indeed intended to be actual characters afflicted with a similar case of color blindness. See the character's own articles for details. That was similar with the Jack character as well, wasn't it, a few episodes ago?
Yeah, I think that seems to be, a thing that's gone across the board there.
Here's a fun note. As Sound Blaster reports the Autobot Headmasters are working with the Autobot Master Warriors, he is drawn as Sound Wave, but with Sound Blaster's colour scheme.
Yeah,
I thought I noticed that as well in hindsight.
Yeah, it had been so long since we'd kind of seen him on the regular that I was sort of like not sure whether I was just misremembering, but yeah, that makes sense.
Trivia. In terms of insert songs, Tate Ikarino Headmasters, the opening theme, plays once more as Fortress Maximus' Scorponok Battle. This time, however, the Malaysian dub does not cut out the song. Oops. Question mark. Fortress in his giant alternate head mode is totally seen using a giant version of Professor X's Cerebro to communicate Chrono's telepathy. I swear I did not copy that note from the TF Wiki when I read my notes out earlier. I swear I didn't. It's just the first thing I thought of. Here we go. Japanese puns are never easy to translate. See our last podcast, folks, if you want to see another example of that. When Chrome Dome meets up with Kirk and the other headmasters ask who the others are, Chrome Dome answers, they are our comrades, using doshi or for the word comrade. Although there is a different character in Japanese that would be more appropriate. I encourage you folks to actually visit the TF Wiki page so you can see the characters on the screen in question. Highbrow repeats doshi, to which Hardhead supplies doshi yo, as in what to do. Chrome Dome then admonishes them that it's no time for puns. Easier said than done. So a bit of creative writing there, I guess, on our translation, but you know what? Totally fine with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, another bit of Japanese wordplay here, as it were. When discussing the Decepticon's hiding spot, Kirk notes Todai Mutokurashi, meaning, can't see the forest for the trees. The literal translation of that being, it's darkest at the base of the lighthouse.
I guess that must be the Japanese equivalent of that saying, which I did not know.
There you go. You learn something new every day.
It's also true. It is darkest at the base of the lighthouse. So very good.
Yeah, there we go. Foreign localization. So, first of all, we've got some interesting titles here. I'm going to do a different order, Andy. Shout Factory subtitle. It is also Operation Destroy the Decepticons. There is an additional note of the review of the last episode shown before the title card is omitted, which is also the case in the Metrodome version that we watched. So there you go. There was a little recap. In Italian, the episode title translates as Chrome Dome's Desperate Plan.
Yeah, that's actually, yeah, I actually think I prefer that, because it's true.
In Mandarin, it translates to The War of Annihilation on the Decepticons.
I mean, it sounds very impressive.
And the Omni Productions dub, which, per the last podcast, folks, you will recall in the TF Wiki note, it said that they basically just do away with actual translating the episode title. They simply went with, Andy, The Full-Scale Assault.
I mean, sure.
Which works.
It's better, yeah, better than the last episode, so.
And that concludes that episode of Transformers Headmasters. So before we sort of close out the show proper, Andy, any additional notes you had on the episode? Anything I perhaps didn't make mention of, or any little random tidbits that you may have?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I really enjoyed how this episode, kind of the use of the Zarek shield and those final kind of shots of, like, the Master Sword just, like, smashing into the ground, and then Fortress and you know, Fortress Maximus after it. Like, it's very kind of cliched Japanese media of that kind of like climactic moment in a battle where you have the thing happens and then you have like a second or two of like waiting to see who won the fight, and then it reveals all by like one of the characters like collapsing or, you know, a blood spurt or something. But this is a pretty good version of that. Like, you know, it was smartly animated. Like, even the intent of like Fortress kind of diving in with just like his sword just like straight down, like, and the force behind it is just like, yeah, this is like really pleasing way of like this little series of events playing out. So I did enjoy that.
As a quick additional note, I've just gone back to the writers' credits, as it were, on the TF Wiki for this episode. In terms of how many episodes they've written, they've actually written a heck of a lot of episodes, Andy, in this series, including the Cybertron is in Grave Danger 2-parter, including... I'll just do a quick count, actually. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, like 17 episodes of this series, including the final 2-parter story of this series.
No, oh, okay. I mean, I guess saying I wrote episodes of Mobile Suit Gundam probably opens quite a lot of doors to you in like the late 80s and early 90s writing scene.
Exactly. So with that being said, folks, next time on the show, we'll be back to talking about 2 episodes as we get near to the conclusion of Headmasters. We'll be discussing episodes 32 and 33, the titles of those episodes per the TF Wiki being My Friend Sixshot, which, as you alluded to in the last episode, Andy, seemingly involves Daniel, which, based on the title card image I can see, what the heck is about to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping this is an incredibly important episode, not just filler, but we will see.
And episode 33, Duel on the Asteroid. There's nothing else to say other than that, sorry.
No, but hopefully it's a duel between Daniel and Sixshot.
Can you imagine?
That's what I'm here for. Daniel with his little...
his little pew-pew laser gun.
Yeah, and Sixshot with his being Sixshot.
Maybe the gun will be remodified by Highbrow so it unleashes like a giant beam of light or something.
And that's how the Zarak shield is defeated.
Could you imagine if it's Daniel? In some ways, it would be apt if it was Daniel, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, you can... I mean, there's like shades of like Star Wars, the Phantom Menace going on there. Mm-hmm. But also you could maybe imagine like the... like Hasbro have been like, look, we've got a lot of these light guns in a warehouse somewhere. We really need to sell them. Like, this needs to be the weapon that defeats Scorponok. You need to write this. You're under contract.
We've got 4 episodes left. We need more Challenger gun toy time. But as mentioned, folks, we'll be back in 2 weeks from the date of publishing this podcast, as we'll be discussing those 2 episodes. If you want to find out more about the show, and if you're a first-time listener, we hope you enjoyed it. You can, of course, visit starscreamspod.com. There you can find links to all the podcast providers that you can find a podcast on, as well as our YouTube channel and social media profile pages on Twitter, or at the time we're recording this, I guess it's now called X or Cross, depending what country you're living in, and Instagram. For all we know, Andy, by the time this podcast is actually released, Twitter maybe, formerly Twitter, maybe renamed to something else, for all we know.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, I'm just going to call it Twitter out of sheer bloody mindedness. So, you know, that's what it is forever.
There you go. Well, folks, with that being said, from myself, Jeremy Graves, from him, Mr. Andy Hanley, we've been Starscream's Goes to Transformers podcast. Until next time, take care and speak to you soon.
Bye, everyone.